Welcome to Fantasy Football Weekly, a production of iHeartRadio.
Time now for Fantasy Football Weekly from iHeartRadio, your weekly source for the nation's best fantasy speculation and advice. Now, along with the guys from Fanball.com, here's the host for Fantasy Football Weekly, Paul Charchian.
I am Paul Charchian, and it is time for America's longest-running fantasy football show. It is Fantasy Football Weekly, an iHeartRadio production. Again, I'm Paul Charchian, Fanball.com. My co-host today, Brian Johnson and Matt Harrison from Fanball.com. Hi, guys.
I am Matt Harrison.
Yes, you are.
That makes me Brian Johnson.
Yes.
It's
you said I am Paul Charchian twice.
All right.
I thought we had to do it that way now.
The I am, you have to make it very clear who's talking. As regular listeners know, over the course of the show, we're going to break down every game fantasy style, and that means we put letter grades on every single meaningful player, tell you if they're an A, B, C, or bench grade. I guess bench is not really a letter grade, but you get the idea. And we also give you our rationale for all of these picks, so you get to decide whether or not you're on board with how, you know, with our assessment of how that player is going to do. Also, we will answer three tough questions. You get to play along, try to go 3-0. We'll give you nine players upon whom you can take a chance, and we'll jump into a time machine to identify the players that everybody else will be trying to pick up next week that you're already going to have because you picked them up this week.
Pew, 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 pew. Time machine.
I think we decided the time machine goes blammo. You kind of like the pew pew better. That was more of a Star Warsy laser thing.
I just think DeLorean every time we were talking time travel, but I can't do a DeLorean noise. I don't know.
Can't do
vroom
that.
Vroom.
1.21 gigawatts.
I know
that's pretty good.
I know it's got hit 88. That's all I know.
We're beginning with the Saints taking on the Jacksonville Jaguars. Brian, on the Saints side, the storyline here is Alvin Kamara. It appears he will not play. You probably won't get a definitive ruling until Sunday morning. But, you know, what do you think about this, especially if it's Latavius Murray available on over half of waiver wires?
Yeah, news got worse throughout the week. Thursday, this the injury popped up that might keep Kamara out. He did not practice Friday. So it's not looking too good. Let's assume he's not playing here, I guess.
Mm-hmm. I think we have to probably assume he's not. Because if he is playing, people will probably
If he was going to play real quick, it was going to be a bad matchup, but it's Alvin Kamara. You're playing Alvin Kamara.
Right. He was my RB9 in a tough matchup when I thought he was fully healthy because we believe he injured himself in practice at the beginning of the week. Now,
so Latavius Murray is not Alvin Kamara.
Breaking news.
Yeah, and really, it's a brutal matchup. Jacksonville has not allowed an opposing running back to top 100 combo yards this season until Christian McCaffrey. And I was prepared to say Alvin Kamara is almost Christian McCaffrey before the season. That would be preposterous, but now it's reality. But so brutal matchup this season. Well, let's go back. We can go back to 2014. Jacksonville has allowed one 100-yard rushing game at home since December of 2014, which is absolutely
insane. That's crazy. That is nuts.
And then speaking back to McCaffrey, he was the first running back to top 50 receiving yards against the Jaguars in their last 18 games.
Unbelievable.
And Latavius Murray
is not going to catch that much anyway.
So he gets a C. He gets the softest C of them all if Kamara doesn't go. If Kamara goes, you got to roll the dice on him, but it's not looking good. So
you're back to what Murray always is, which is just the hope of a goal line touchdown and little more.
I mean, the good part is he knows how to take a handoff from Teddy Bridgewater specifically. That's maybe the highest level point in this game.
There is history there, that's for sure. All right. Yeah. Now let's go to the A-land where Michael Thomas lives, because Jacksonville likely to be without Jalen Ramsey for a third straight game.
I don't know. This thing's gone both ways, right?
I don't. Well,
the owner said he thought he'd play, and then Ramsey said, "I'm still in pain."
I never listened to owners personally. I don't know. He has not practiced, as far as we know. All right. So if Ramsey plays, easy B, okay? Because it's Michael Thomas. He's matchup proof. Ramsey doesn't go, it's an A. They won't shadow Thomas with A.J. Bouye, who is a very good corner as well. But Bouye didn't even shadow D.J. Moore last week, so I doubt they have him shadow Michael Thomas. Long story short, you're starting Thomas regardless. But whether Ramsey goes or not, Ted Ginn, Traquan Smith, both dart throws that I'm not endorsing. They're both on the bench. Mm-hmm. Jared Cook, gets a starting grade with a C just because this is one of the worst weeks for tight ends I can remember in the history of fantasy football. Jacksonville was looking like a decent matchup for opposing tight ends. Travis Kelce had 88 yards, Delanie Walker 64, Noah Fant scored a touchdown 2 weeks ago. Then Greg Olsen drops a goose egg last week on only two targets, but I don't know. I would still start Cook. He's in top 12 territory, has been targeted six times in each of the last two games, scored last week. He's a warm enough body at the position.
Mm-hmm.
Teddy Bridgewater, warm enough too, posted big numbers against Tampa Bay, but the Bucs stop here with Jacksonville. The Jags have held 3 of 5 opposing quarterbacks who 1 or 0 touchdown passes. It all depends on Jalen Ramsey here, too, for Bridgewater. If Ramsey doesn't go, he gets a C, kind of a take-a-chance-on-me type guy. If Ramsey plays, easy bend for Teddy.
Speaking of which, time to give a posthumous peacock. I don't know. Where's my peacock sound? Brianne, where's my peacock sound? Thank you. There we go. To Christian Peterson, last week's show, nailing Teddy Bridgewater as his take-a-chance-on-me quarterback. He found Teddy's second ever game with more than two touchdowns. Unbelievable call by Christian Peterson. We give him the posthumous peacock. Christian didn't die, but he's not on the show. Please feel free to continue.
Rest in peace, Christian.
That's it for the Saints. Over to the Jacksonville side, starting with Leonard Fournette. Going to give him a B here. Ground totals for notable opposing backs against New Orleans have been alarming so far. Todd Gurley, 6 for 63. He did not score. Chris Carson, 15 carries for 53 yards on the ground. Then Zeke had 18 carries for only 35. He did manage to score, but there's no way you bench Leo, but you temper your expectations. The Saints have not allowed a top 12 performance to a running back yet, and their front seven is the healthiest it's been all season. So just a B for Fournette, almost a C. DJ Chark, DD Westbrook, I can give them both a B because it all depends on who gets Marshawn Lattimore on the outside. These two kind of cycle
Chark,
in and out.
Because Lattimore almost never plays the slot, and Westbrook runs almost entirely out of the slot. So
He does. They've both been funneling in and out, but Chark is the safer play. And by the way, wasn't even drafted. He's wide receiver three right now.
You think he's safer? See, I think he gets Lattimore because Chark's going to get Lattimore, I think, way more because, again, Lattimore doesn't go to the slot. It'll be P.J. Williams in the slot. That's D.D. Westbrook. That's why I think Westbrook's actually safer, even though Chark's obviously been dramatically better to this point.
They're going
to
move him.
See it that way?
I don't know. They're going to move him. It's not going to be 100% one guy in the slot. That's all I'm saying. They're going to go back and forth. So if I had to pick one, I'm kind of with you where I think Lattimore is on Chark more than Westbrook, so.
Okay.
But I'm still giving both a B. But Lattimore stifled Mike Evans and Amari Cooper over the last 2 weeks.
I know,
he is
that's
back.
The worry.
Yeah, big time worry. And Gardner Minshew, who I know we'll talk about more, getting a B this week. Currently quarterback 11 in most formats, and apparently an even better fantasy football player. Have you heard about this?
I have. How about that?
Maybe we'll talk about that more. Yeah. We'll keep it to the matchup. Saints are middle of the pack in passing touchdowns allowed with 8, but they have recently stifled Jameis Winston and Dak Prescott, holding both under 225 passing yards. That said, New Orleans has allowed 4 rushing touchdowns to quarterbacks, and Minshew has games of 7 carries for 42 yards and 6 for 56.
Yeah, he's a little fleet of foot.
He's a dual threat, so he's a safe B. It's crazy to say, but Minshew, safe B.
Minshew's been fantasy startable every week of the season so far. Matt, let's go to Dallas taking on the Jets. Last week, Dallas screwed themselves over, I believe, by choosing a pass-heavy game against the Packers, a bad run defense. Now they get the Jets. Jets are another team you can run on. I wonder if they don't, correct back towards a Zeke-heavy game plan here. What do you think?
Well, if they are a middle-of-the-pack run defense that's still missing C.J. Mosley, Zeke has averaged over 90% of the running back snaps and touches over the last 2 weeks. I'm still giving him an A. I know people are a little bit bummed about his production in the last couple weeks, but I think he's going to be totally forgotten on Fanball, where he's 8,400 this week. I'd probably play him in the Fanball 5. Dak Prescott, I'm giving an A grade to. 17% of Dak's passes are traveling further than 20 yards downfield. That's the third highest rate in deep balls in the league.
That's great.
His passer rating on those deep balls, 116.7.
Ooh.
Plus, he gets left tackle Tyron Smith back from an ankle injury this year. He's going to clean up against another bad defense, which he normally torches. Amari Cooper and Michael Gallup both getting A's. Both of these guys had 14 targets last week, and the outside corners are the weak spot for the Jets. Trumaine Johnson and Daryl Roberts have allowed 72% completion percentage, given up 384 yards and three scores so far this year. Randall Cobb's on the bench because slot corner Brian Poole is actually kind of good.
Okay.
He's only allowed 56 yards on the season, and Jason Witten's on the bench. He's not seeing enough targets and totally touchdown to grind it. On the other side, there's one maybe two-ish starting grades. Le'Veon Bell I'm giving an A grade to, because maybe the Packers uncovered something last week as Aaron Jones racked up 182 total yards and four scores. Now, I'm not saying Bell's going to get that, but Saquon totaled 139 total yards against Dallas.
Mm-hmm.
Kamara had 89 in that weird Sunday nighter that was super low scoring a couple weeks ago. Dual threat backs have had some decent success against Dallas, and Le'Veon's one of those, and he gets Sam Darnold back in the lineup, and that only upticks, I think, his production a little bit more.
For sure.
Darnold's on the bench, though. His spleen has healed enough to allow him to play. It's too bad his line could still get him killed. The Jets are worst in the league in tackles for loss, sacks, and quarterback hit rate. The Cowboys have not allowed a passing score since week two, and only one quarterback has topped 240 yards against them this year. I am giving Jamison Crowder a tepid C grade, and Robbie Anderson's on the bench. Of course, in Darnold's only game this season, he copiously targeted slot receiver Crowder 17 times against Buffalo.
17 in the opener, right?
Yep. And then the only wide receiver to top 75 yards against the Cowboys this year was Michael Thomas, working mostly from the slot. And then, of course, we liked Chris Herndon to come back this week.
Yeah,
but
we
then
did.
He got a hamstring injury working out on his own last Friday. So thanks, Chris Herndon, for not coming back.
Yeah, we waited this long for Herndon, and now you got to wait at least a couple more weeks.
Yep.
Eagles take on the Vikings in Minnesota. We'll start on the Eagles side, where Jordan Howard has been an absolute Viking killer. He's one of two players to have topped 100 yards in Minnesota, going all the way back to the 2016 season.
That's Jacksonville-like.
That is Jacksonville-like. And with Chicago last year, he put up 109 yards and two scores in Minnesota in the season finale of last season. So he's a guy the Vikings have always struggled to handle, and here he comes into this game having scored five times in his last three games. He's seeing far more snaps and carries than Miles Sanders over the last three games, and he gets a B grade here. Miles Sanders hits the bench. Trending the wrong way on both playing time, goal line usage, and fumbles, we're going to keep him on the bench for this game in a tougher matchup. As for the pass game, Carson Wentz gets a B. Vikings have allowed almost two touchdowns per game, which is double last year's rate when they only gave up 15 passing touchdowns on the entire season. Cornerback Xavier Rhodes, or as he now likes to be called, ex-Xavier Rhodes, as of this season, looking noticeably worse than previous seasons. Against a better Viking secondary last year when these teams met, Carson Wentz threw for 311 yards and two scores. And again, the secondary was playing better then. So I still like Carson Wentz in this matchup. Alshon Jeffrey could have a good game here. He's got 10 days off, so he should be at full health. He sort of hobbled through last week's game.
Another sort of notable Viking killer from his days with the Bears.
Yes.
He used to go off.
Off of the Vikings, that's
especially
right.
Here in Minnesota.
Exactly.
Those places.
He's averaging seven targets per game. He's scored twice. Minnesota secondary, again, I think he's going to get Xavier Rhodes in this one. And again, Rhodes usually gets the most physical guy the opponent gives you. And that's going to be Alshon Jeffrey. And I'm just not loving what I've seen out of Rhodes. So I've got to be great in Alshon Jeffrey in this one. Nelson Aguilar on the bench. Vikings have been very good against slot corners for years. And especially if Mackenzie Alexander returns, I'm particularly nervous about Aguilar. Slot receivers this year averaging 34 yards per game against the Vikings. And that leaves us with Zach Ertz, who gets a solid A grade. The Vikings have allowed the fourth most tight end receptions, the 10th most yards. I think Ertz a focal point of this game. Let's go to the Vikings side. Vikings offense revolves around Dalvin Cook, who gets a B grade here. He's now run for at least 110 yards in four of his five starts, and he's averaging over 5.3 yards per carry in those four good starts that he's had, basically everything but the Chicago Bear game. On the flip side of it, though, the Eagles rank number two in yards per carry. They've yet to allow a back to top 44 rushing yards. This is a tough matchup at only 3.2 yards per carry allowed. It's kind of strength versus strength. Dalvin Cook versus Eagles. I'm going to give him a B grade for this one. Then we go to the passing game. With Kirk Cousins, I'm nervous about the Vikings' offensive line holding back an excellent Eagles pass rush that ranks fourth best by Pro Football Focus. All of Kirk's warts surface when he has to make quick decisions under pressure. But working in his favor is a really ratty Eagles secondary riddled with injury to key players like Ronald Darby, Avante Maddox. They're both 99% out, and Rodney McLeod, who looks like a game-time decision, those would all be key losses there. Stephon Diggs and Adam Thielen both have strong matchups with those guys out, and let's talk about them individually. By the way, C grade on Kirk Cousins, A grade on Thielen, because prior to facing Luke Falk last week, the Eagles secondary was allowing the most yards per game to opposing wide receivers, and because Thielen works the slot, he would go up against Orlando Scandrick, who was on the streets 2 weeks ago, and I know Scandrick had a flashy game last week with a couple of sacks, and he scored a defensive touchdown.
He did score a touchdown, yeah.
But he's not a very good cover corner. So,
and Luke like Falk Thielen makes you look good.
Yeah, well, there is that. Stephon Diggs gets a B grade, working almost entirely on the outside. He's going to see competent cornerbacks, Rasul Douglas and Sidney Jones. But I think Diggs is still waiting for that give-me-the-ball game, and I think that could be coming here, where they try to placate Diggs a little bit. He didn't get all the passes I'm sure you'd have liked to have had last week. This might be the one where they try to feed him a few extra times. A B grade for him.
So we have homecoming games for players when they go play in their hometown, revenge games against old teams,
birthday games. Yeah.
So the Eagles are returning to the site of where they won the Super Bowl a couple years ago. I want to see if there's any historical
The champagne games.
I like that.
Lombardi games. Everything Charge is available at fanball.com by going to fanball.com/charge. You get instant access to my free weekly rankings, my free $1,000 weekly contest, all of our podcasts, and it is your portal to guillotine leagues. Again, fanball.com/charge. Coming up next, it's a segment we call Take a Chance on Me. Nine players you wouldn't normally start, but you can this week. You are listening to Fantasy Football Weekly. Football Weekly returns. This is a segment we call Take a Chance on Me. Nine players not normally in your lineups, many of whom are available on the waiver wire. It is our very special royalty-free version of Take a Chance on Me.
The song like ruins my day, like every time I
know,
hear it.
It hurts it, in it your
sucks.
Heart, doesn't it? What did we pay? How much did we pay for this song?
It gets a bench grade for me. Yeah, a bench minus.
Bench minus grade for the Take a Chance.
Is that an okay
the
minus grade?
Royalty-free version of Take a Chance on Me. We paid nothing for the song. You pay nothing for the advice. We begin at the quarterback position. Brian.
Hooday. I got Andy Dalton at Baltimore.
I tried that last week. It didn't work out.
It works when if I can make Marcus Mariota work a couple weeks ago, I can make Andy Dalton work at Baltimore.
Dalton wasn't that bad, actually.
Okay.
Dalton's had a good season, actually, from a fantasy perspective.
Four or five games, he's been fantasy startable.
Well, they're trailing before the national anthem even ends, so it's positive game scripts for the Bengals, but that's why I like him here. But I also like him because already without their top two cornerbacks this week, Jimmy Smith, who's not going to play, and Tavon Young, who was lost in the preseason, the Ravens just lost starting safety Tony Jefferson. So that's great news for Dalton, who has nine passing touchdowns over his last three games against the Ravens, who were already one of six teams with an opponent passing percentage north of 65%, which is top six in the league. So fire up Andy Dalton. Fire up the red rifle.
All right, Matt.
Fire up fire crotch, whatever you want to say.
Stop. Matt, who's your take a chance to be quarterback?
It's come to this. Baker Mayfield is no longer a guy that you can auto start. And for good reason, his line has been awful. He's been inaccurate. But that changes this week. The Seahawks deploy one of the league's worst pass rushes. They're 26th in sack rate and worst in the NFL in QB hit rate. They also allowed Andy Dalton to throw for 418 yards and two touchdowns. I believe I called that one in week one's Take a Chance on Me. Backups. Yeah, thank you. Backups Mason Rudolph and Teddy Bridgewater didn't put up huge yards, but each threw for two scores. Plus, Jared Goff nearly hung 400 on them last week. Baker Mayfield going to have a good day this week.
All right, it's come to this. The Baker Mayfield is a Take a Chance on Me quarterback.
Yeah.
Kyle Allen takes on the Buccaneers, a secondary that has completely collapsed. Over the past month, four inconsistent passers have dominated the Buccaneers, averaging 375 yards.
Yikes.
Average 375 and two touchdowns per game. Norv Turner has asked Kyle Allen to be very efficient to this point. He's only thrown 26, 34, and 30 passes, but that changes here. Tampa seeing the most passing attempts in the league, 44 per game. So Kyle Allen's going to get some volume in there, too. He's actually inside my top 10 among quarterbacks this week. Let's go to the running back position. Brian, who's your take a chance at me runner?
Oh, Deion Lewis at Denver. I know I just kind of sighed in disgust there, but I think there's hope for Deion if there's any sort of PPR format involved in your league. The Broncos are one of nine teams to yield at least 40 targets to opposing running backs. Catch totals from opposing backfields over the last four games are 9, 8, 5, and 6. Derrick Henry only has three targets over the last 3 weeks, so Deion Lewis has reestablished himself as the pass-catching down back in that offense. And Denver has also allowed the second most red zone touches to running backs this year. So if you are super desperate in PPR, Deion Lewis is your guy.
All right.
I've got Rashad Penny because Cleveland's run defense has had some problems of late. Last week, both Matt Breida and Tevin Coleman topped 95 yards on the ground. All in all, they gave up 245 on the ground to the San Fran backs. That's a team that is very committed to the run, and the Seahawks are similarly committed to the ground game. Seattle has the fifth most rushing attempts in the league. The Niners are the third, by the way. Mm-hmm. Plus, we're still on fumble watch for Chris Carson as he could see some major bench time with another drop. In week two, prior to Penny getting hurt, the split was 15 carries for Carson and 10 for Penny as Carson's fumbling issues were coming to light. Penny is healthier now than last week. I kind of like him here.
All right. It's a speculative move, I would say. You know what isn't a speculative move? My guy. And oh, do I love my take a chance of me running back available, by the way. In 92% of leagues, Gus Edwards. He faces a Bengals team giving up 200 total yards.
300 makes it better.
It would have been even better.
It's believable.
203 total yards per game to running backs and almost two touchdowns per game to opposing running backs. And it's not just the starters. And by the way, Mark Ingram's my number one ranked running back this week. The backups are getting paid as well. Jeff Wilson, Jalen Samuels, and Chase Edmonds have already faced the Bengals and averaged 68 total yards and over a touchdown per game between them. Gus Edwards might take a chance at me running back. Brian, give me your take a chance at me receiver for this week.
Oh, I'm doubling down on Houdet Nation with Tyler Eifert at the Ravens. Again, starting safety Tony Jefferson done for the year with the MCL. He will be replaced by Chuck Clark, who has seen just 30 targets over his short career.
Okay. You made that name up.
And in those 30 targets, Chuck Clark has allowed 21 catches for 219 yards and four touchdowns.
Jeez, really?
So that benefits Tyler Eifert.
That's insane.
Directly, yes. And before Tony Jefferson even went down, Baltimore had allowed the second most yards to tight ends over the last 3 weeks, and everyone was on Eifert last week against the Cardinals in DFS.
Right. Yeah.
This is your chance to pounce on recency bias on Fanball.
Yeah, because
go roster Eifert.
Yeah,
no one's going to be on Eifert.
Yeah.
He's going to be super low owned and a great player to help you win a tournament this weekend. So Tyler Eifert, let's go.
I've got Keyshawn Johnson of the Cardinals. He saw the field on 97% of the snaps last week, which was boosted a little bit by the Christian Kirk injury, but it really doesn't matter if Kirk goes this week, as Johnson runs most of his routes as a boundary receiver. Guess who else ran their routes against the Falcons as an outside receiver last week? Well, it was Will Fuller, who went for 14 catches, 217, and three scores.
And you know, he got tackled at the one twice. That would have been a 5-touchdown receiving game and would have given him the biggest scoring game in the history of fantasy football if he'd have gotten those two more yards.
Well, and get this. The week before, A.J. Brown scored twice in top 90 yards. Corey Davis, top 90 yards in score.
Right.
Prior to that, T.Y. Hilton had 65 in a score, and Nelson Aguilar went for 107 in a score. They can't cover the outside receivers. The only team that stopped them was the Vikings in a game where they threw 10 passes. Keyshawn Johnson.
The only team they've stopped is the Vikings. Keyshawn Johnson, I like it. In fact, I had planned to use Keyshawn Johnson for my take a chance
on
me, but you got him in first. I am instead going with Kiki Cutie.
I like that too, though.
Deshaun Watson is fantasy football's highest scoring quarterback, so of course we're interested in anybody who might catch any of his passes. He's rounding into form from last year's ACL injury, and he's seen his snap counts rise dramatically over the last 2 weeks. And last week he had a really nice 42-yard gain across the middle of the field, and to my eyes he looked 100% healthy, Kiki Cutie. He is startable in a strong matchup against Kansas City's slot cornerback Kendall Fuller, who has already allowed two scores in his coverage to this point of the season. Kiki Cutie. Let's work in one more matchup, Brian. You already gave us two Bengals that you like, but there's probably more. I'm guessing Tyler Boyd is a strong play in this one as well.
Yeah, Tyler Boyd helps Andy Dalton's prospects definitely this week. Enjoying a nice season again because of the positive game scripts the Bengals are providing the passing game. Boyd runs nearly 70% of his routes from the slot, which sets up nicely against the Ravens, who have surrendered big box scores from the seams. Jarvis Landry, 8 for 167. Christian Kirk and Larry Fitzgerald both topped 100 yards running out of the slot. And then Juju had 7 for 75 and a touchdown recently. And Boyd has topped 70 yards in each of his last three games against Baltimore with two total touchdowns during that span. I'm going to give him an A, actually. I like Tyler Boyd that much because slot receivers kill in Baltimore. I'm not giving Auden Tate a starting grade, though. A.J. Green not going to make his return, by the way. Boundary receivers have struggled against Baltimore, even with the latest injury to the secondary. I got Auden Tate on the bench this week. And Joe Mixon, I want to give him a B. He feels like he should be a B every week, but
I know
the Bengals are just so bad. But, I mean, he's only scored once in four meetings with Baltimore, by the way. But they're really, the Ravens aren't
that tough.
He's
only scored once all year.
Well, yeah. But in his history with Baltimore, just once in four meetings. But the Ravens aren't that tough on paper. Outside of the opener against Miami, they've allowed at least one rushing touchdown to a running back in every game. And they've also yielded the fourth most red zone touches to the position. You're starting Mixon, but I'm going to temper my expectations just because that O-line is so brutal and give him a C here. And that does it for the Baltimore side. Over to for the Cincy side. Now over to the Baltimore side. Mark Ingram, you said, was your number one running back this week.
Yes.
I cannot argue that. He gets an easy A, probably an A, the fantasy Fonzie.
Yep.
Cincinnati allowing more than 5 yards per carry, and they've surrendered the most receiving yards to running backs. So Ingram in an obvious smash spot, and so is Gus Edwards, probably. Your take a chance on me runner charge.
Yes.
He gets an easy starting grade, too, in this matchup. Marquise Brown was prepared to give him a pretty solid B, but now he is doubtful to play.
Yeah.
News coming out on Friday, so I don't think we can expect him to go. I guess you could put Miles Boykin in his spot.
Yeah, maybe.
It was a boom or bust scenario for Brown. Since he has allowed the fifth most pass plays of 20-plus yards, but opposing wide receivers are only averaging 15 targets as a whole.
I know.
Which is lowest in the league.
Everybody just runs to victory against the Bengals.
They
funnel
to the
pass.
Run. So, you know, I'm saying Boykin is on the bench. I would have given Brown a starting grade, and I was close to give Willie Snead a starting grade, but since he actually defends the seam pretty well, so basically all the receivers on the bench if Brown doesn't play, which it looks like he will not. Mark Andrews not on the bench, though. He gets a B, has seen at least 7 targets in every game. The Bengals are allowing a modest 3 catches, 43 yards per game to opposing tight ends, but it's such a wasteland. You're starting Mark Andrews. And you're definitely starting Lamar Jackson this week.
No kidding.
So when these teams met last November, L-Jax carried the ball 27 times for 119 yards.
Those days are over, I think, of the 27 carry game for him. But
probably. He did some quarterback stuff, too, but
Except quarterback stuff like passing.
Yeah.
Can you do quarterback stuff?
Well, let's not forget,
to pay extra for
Kyler Murray ran the ball 10 times for 93 and a touchdown last week. And yes, when it comes to passing the ball, since he's not good at defending that, they've surrendered multiple touchdown passes in 3 out of 5 games when teams don't even need to throw against them. So L-Jax probably gets a fantasy Fonzie too.
I think you just named our podcast. Every week, poor Brianne has to come up with some pithy name for this week's edition of the podcast. I think quarterback stuff is going to end up being the pithy name for this week's podcast. The signature daily fantasy contest at fanball.com is called the Fanball 5. Why 5, you might ask? Well, it costs $5.
Oh, that makes sense.
The salary cap is $55,000.
Nice.
And if you've got the highest scoring player at the 5 positions, quarterback, running back, wide receiver, tight end, defense, you hit the Fanball 5 jackpot of, well, that's $2,000. It really ought to be 5, but it's $2,000. The Fanball 5, $5 to play with a $10,000 prize pool and the $2,000 Fanball 5 bonus. $2,000 is divisible by 5.
It sure is.
There is that. Go to fanball.com/5 to play the Fanball 5. Coming up next on Fantasy Football Weekly, we'll break down more matchups, including the early, early game on Sunday, Carolina taking on Tampa Bay. Is there any stopping Christian McCaffrey, even against a great Tampa run defense? We'll tell you when we come back. listening to Fantasy Football Weekly, an iHeartRadio production. I am Paul Charchi, and my co-hosts are Brian Johnson and Matt Harrison from Fanball.com. You can hear us over the air on many stations around the country, and this show is also a podcast available every Friday evening on all major podcasting platforms, including the number one destination for podcast, the iHeartRadio app. Early Sunday game. Last week when we talked about the London game, we were like thankful that it's a regular time start. Well, we're not so lucky on this one. It is an 8:30 a.m. Central time start. 7:30. No, so that would be 9:30 Eastern. That's 6:30 a.m. Pacific. That's ridiculous. I don't know why they do that. Maybe we'll find out from our returning London correspondent.
Hello, Chachi.
Well, you might want to. People may remember you from last week. It's Colin McCockney.
It's me, Colin McCockney. Let's have a good old chinwag. I've got a chock-a-block of great stats for you, Governor. You chuffed?
Yes. Yes, do I want to be chuffed?
Yeah, Christian McCaffrey gets the anorak. We're held to 53 total yards in the chuffing week two meeting.
Well, you'll have to excuse me. My cockney's a little rough.
Hey, Brian!
it's been a while since I spent that summer backpacking through Europe and fell for, what's my backstory again? Some cocky lass. We didn't call them...
Cockneyed.
Cockneyed lass.
Cockneyed lass, yeah.
No, not...
She my sister!
Cockneyed lass, man. Yeah. That they need to... We didn't call them that, or at least I didn't call... what was her name? I forgot her name. She was
Cheryl. The way you go through them, yeah. Carol.
Totally. So, but I believe what Colin said was Christian McCaffrey was held to 53 total yards in the week two meeting.
Kamara did Bob's your uncle 104 yards last week on 22 touches.
But he did manage 104 total yards last week on 22 touches.
Yeah, hey, Charchi.
Yeah.
Kyle Allen, you have a chance on me.
Yes, we will take a chance on Kyle Allen.
DJ Moore and Curtis Samuel get the bee's knees.
The bee's knees, you say? Wait, I know that one. I think you're giving them a B grade.
Hey, the bleeding pirates have allowed.
I didn't even have to sleep with some cockneyed lass to find out that was the case.
Nah. The Pirates have allowed over 300 meters to four straight teams.
That would be the Buccaneers have allowed over 300 yards, is
yards.
What we say, Colin.
Yeah.
Okay. To four straight teams.
Yards. Lord love a duck. Seven different wide receivers have topped 80 yards in the last 4 weeks. Know what I mean? Including Samuel, 91 in week two.
Brian,
I actually do know what you mean.
Did you ever spend a summer on a pirate ship?
No, not with bleeding pirates either.
Greg Olsen, blimey, A grade. All right, Giza. As far as tight end matchups go, this is a good one. Sorted, mate.
Yeah, as far as tight end matchups go, this is a good one.
God, Don Bennett. Olsen had 6 for 110 in the previous meeting, and the Bucks have given up a tight end scour in it 3 straight weeks.
Scour would be a touchdown, so 3 straight tight end touchdowns over the last 3 weeks the Bucks have allowed, you say, Colin.
Mm. Or to the Pirates. Ronald Jones and Peyton Barber on the bench. Lord love a duck. Jones had the most touches last week. Barber had the most snaps. Dare Agunbawale had the most routes run. Know what I mean?
Yeah, I think everyone knows what you mean there.
No, I'm unclear.
Oh, Jones had the most touches last week. Barber had the most snaps.
Oh, okay.
And Dare Ogunbowale had the most pass routes run.
Ah.
A lot of disparity between the backs there, Charles.
Yes.
Is what Colin is trying to say here.
Oh, yeah, okay. Barber had 2 carpet 82-1 in the first meeting and was scarred in the carpet over the last Rorf games. So if I had to pick one, it'd be Barber. Know what I mean?
Rorf? Rorf is a word?
I think you said Barber had 23 carries for 82 yards and a touchdown in the first meeting and has scored in 3 of the last 4
games.
So if he had to pick one, it would be Barber, he says.
Yeah, okay. Jameis Winston, clock start. Blimey, Winston is one of only 2 quarterbacks to top 200 yards against the Panthers this season.
Yeah, Winston 1 of 2 to top 200 yards against the Panthers this season. That's right. Jameis Winston is one of those guys.
Since the beginning of 2017, Jameis has had 20 touchdown, 20 picks ratio in facing zone defenses. Enough said.
Enough said there.
Yeah, I think we got it.
Mike Evans, clock start, 0 catches last week. Hasn't scoured touchdown against Carolina in Ching Strait.
That meant Mike Evans had zero catches last week and hasn't scored a touchdown against Carolina in five straight meetings.
Ching five.
And has topped 61, 60, and has topped 61 yards only once during that same five-game stretch.
Chris Godwin, a lot above the passer rating when targeted. Chris Godwin has pulled a blinder, 156.3.
The passer rating of quarterback Jameis Winston when targeting wide receiver Chris Godwin is an almost perfect 156.3.
Wow. Yeah. Had 8-121 in the last meeting from the slot. That's Carolina weak spot, isn't it?
It is. It is. I think I know what that was.
Yeah, we got that one.
All right.
OJ Howard bench.
We know that one too. All too well.
What about in fantasy baseball leagues?
Cheerio.
All right.
Colin McCockney, everybody. Yeah, nicely done. Colin McCockney, thank you very much. Our London correspondent chiming in. It's always good to hear from Colin. Houston takes on Kansas City. This is a tricky one with a lot of moving parts. You're going to have to work with me on this, particularly on the Kansas City side where we've got a number of variables here. First, for Patrick Mahomes, normally an A start. Get this. I'm not giving him an A. Giving him a B. Giving him to B. The business.
Wait, did Colin come in and teach you how to speak Cockney?
I think he did.
Or Jamaican or something?
I don't know what that was. He's got the ankle injury. He's got the makeshift offensive line, likely missing starting tackle Eric Fisher and starting guard Andrew Wiley. And we don't know the status of Tyreek Hill. We believe Sammy Watkins is not going to play. There's a lot of moving parts here. So I've only got a B grade on Patrick Mahomes. This is one of the few times you may be able to put somebody else in your lineup ahead of him. So let's talk about some of the other elements of the passing game, including Tyreek Hill. If he's active...
I was going to say Watkins was listed as doubtful on Friday.
Right. So I don't think
he's not going to go. It's not like...
Tyreek Hill, if he's active, I assume that means he'll play. And he'll probably play most of the snaps, I guess. But maybe not all of them. So you're going to have to factor in that, you know, he probably doesn't play all of the snaps. He runs from all over the field, left, right, slot. And if he runs from the slot, he will match up with Bradley Roby, who used to be good with Denver. That was a long time ago. He's a middle of the pack cornerback now, and it's Tyreek Hill, and you're probably going to start him. But I've got a B grade on him because of the potentially reduced snap count. What about the other receivers, you may ask? Well, assuming Watkins doesn't go, you could probably still start DeMarcus Robinson and Mecole Hardman. But if Tyreek Hill returns, it probably hurts those guys some too. And Robinson and Hardman will split time against Jonathan Joseph and Lonnie Johnson. Cornerbacks, they're both highly burnable. They rank 64th and 105th at the cornerback position by Pro Football Focus. I've got a C grade on both Robinson and Hardman. If Tyreek Hill doesn't go, you could probably bump them up to Bs just because they will get more usage here. But overall, I don't love either one, and I think the C grade is probably just about right. Then the running game has got a fair amount of difficulty built into it as well, because LeSean McCoy only got the two touches last week. He had that highly reduced role. That's probably a chunk of why they ended up losing that game. I think they're going to try to use him a lot more this time around. And the Texans are giving up 145 total yards to opposing running backs, so there's still enough to go around. I know McCoy burned you last week, but I think you can get him back in your lineup this week. I've got a C grade on him, C grade on Damian Williams, who got all the work last week, but didn't do anything with it. He averages 2.6 yards per carry, and his season average is only 1.8 yards per carry for Damian Williams. Meanwhile, McCoy's season average is 5 yards a carry. So at this point with Damian Williams, you're really down to him being a PPR running back. And fortunately, Houston has allowed the most running back receptions and the second most running back yards, so Damian Williams remains startable with a C grade. Last guy's Travis Kelce. I've only got a B grade on him as well. Kelce faces a Houston defense that's given up just 30 yards to tight ends per game and hasn't allowed a score. That's it. So it is a tough matchup for Kelce. And again, all the questions on Mahomes with the ankle, the offensive line, maybe Kelsey's going to have to stay back and block more, all of that together. And I'm nervous about Kelce to the point that I've given him a rare B. Houston side of the ball. I love both of the running backs in this game. Carlos Hyde should be poised for a very nice game in a revenge game, Brian.
Booyah.
Not much of a revenge game, but it's a revenge game.
There's no way in the history of fantasy football anyone has loved both running backs from the Houston Texans in the same game, but I'm intrigued
here. Right. There might have been a Steve Slayton, Arian Foster game, maybe? I don't know.
A little crossover once?
Yeah, maybe.
I doubt it, though.
Kansas City is allowing the fifth most rushing attempts, the most rushing yards, and 5.3 yards per carry. I like Carlos Hyde. I like Duke Johnson. Johnson last week is coming off season highs in rushing attempts and rushing yards. And here's a great stat that we've unearthed. He's outsnapped Carlos Hyde by 50% in the two Houston losses. If you think Houston's going to lose to the Chiefs, Duke Johnson may be the better play. Then we go to the passing game. Deshaun Watson is an obvious A, and the Chiefs have allowed a quarterback rushing touchdown in two of their last three games, and they've actually become pretty solid against the pass, but that's mostly because teams are running through them, so you don't have to pass. And unlike the Colts last week, the Texans' dismal offensive line, I don't know that they can just manhandle the Chiefs, so I think there will be more throwing than what we got last week. Deshaun Watson remains an A-level start. DeAndre Hopkins is an A start. He's going to see coverage from Breshad Breeland, who's having a down year, but did, you know, I'll mention, hold his own against T.Y. Hilton last week, so there's that. Kansas City has held every opposing wide receiver except Kenny Golladay in check since week one, so there's that. And I know Hopkins is way overdue for a big game, and you've languished with him, but you still have to start him here, and I've got an A grade on him. And Will Fuller, I'm not just chasing last week's box score, an A grade here too, as he goes up primarily against Charvarius Ward in coverage, and he's going to be shadowing Will Fuller. That's a huge speed advantage for Will Fuller. We saw what he can do last week. I don't think you want to leave him on the bench, and Kiki Cutie was my take a chance on me wide receiver from last segment. Final matchup of this segment is Tennessee taking on Denver. On the Tennessee side, you already told us you like Deion Lewis in this game. If you like Deion Lewis, I want to believe you're going to like Derrick Henry.
Yeah, I like Derrick Henry. I love Derrick Henry in standard leagues. He gets the A. I'm going to just give him a B in PPR leagues, and that's okay. Why I like Deion Lewis so much this week. But back to Henry, has at least 17 touches in every game. But as I mentioned earlier, just three total targets over the last 3 weeks, so the passing game work has sort of dried up. But Denver is giving up the seventh most rushing attempts, eighth most rushing yards, and third most rushing touchdowns per game to opposing running backs. They also lost Bradley Chubb to a torn ACL recently.
Mm-hmm.
So Derrick Henry, easy A in standard, B in PPR, as I mentioned. Deion Lewis, as Charch mentioned, might take a chance on me running back. I'm not taking a chance on Corey Davis or A.J. Brown in the receiving game. Chris Harris likely to shadow Corey Davis, so that's a no-brainer bench right there. And A.J. Brown has shown flashes of brilliance, but still not a full-time player yet. He has yet to see 70% of the snaps in a single game, so he's on the bench, and so is Adam Humphries. We're not going to even go there. Delanie Walker is borderline benchable lately. He hasn't played in more than 50% of the snaps over the last 2 weeks, just two catches for 14 yards over the last 2 weeks as well. Mm-hmm. Very gross. Against the tight ends, the Broncos appear tough on paper, but the quality of opponents is even grosser than that. The only true tight end they've faced is Darren Waller, who had a nice game of seven catches and 70 yards in the opener. And outside of that, the tight end production has been minimal because the opponents have been so bad. But here are the target totals for tight ends against Denver. Oakland tight ends, 10 targets. Chicago tight ends, 9. Green Bay, 6. Jacksonville, 8. So they are involved. Mm. Delanie gets a C in the tight end wasteland. Marcus Mariota is on the bench, though, has 1 or 0 touchdown passes in 3 of 5 games. 4 of the 5 quarterbacks to face Denver finished well outside of the top 20 in most formats. Aaron Rodgers, Phillip Rivers combined for 1 touchdown pass this year. Easy benching for Mariota. Over to the Denver side, not a good week for the running backs here.
No,
Philip Lindsay, yeah. Royce Freeman, still in a timeshare inexplicably. Eye test will tell you Lindsay is a way better back, but he's still only seen about 60% of the work. But again, this is a brutal matchup. Marlon Mack rushed for 51 yards on 20 carries against Tennessee. Leonard Fournette had 66 on 15. Devontae Freeman only 28 yards on 12 carries. None of them scored. Don't expect much from your Denver backs this week.
And the Leonard Fournette game, as I recall, to get to 64, he had to go from
the 69
yard run to bring him back from negative 5 yards.
That is absolutely correct. Failed to mention that, which is just mind blowing, really.
Yes.
Also mind-blowing has been Cortland Sutton, a top 12 PPR wide receiver so far this year, taking a bigger leap than most expected in his second year. Should see a lot of Malcolm Brown in coverage who basically sucks. Since the start of last season, Malcolm Brown has allowed 10 touchdowns in his coverage, the second most in football in that span. Cortland Sutton, clearly the number one wide receiver now. Manny Sanders is not. I'll still give Sanders the C. Played in just over 60% of the snaps last week. A little concerning, but slot receivers like Jarvis Landry and Mohamed Sanu have had good games against the Titans, so a C for Sanders. A C for Noah Fant. Titans have allowed a tight end touchdown in 4 of 5 games, and the one game they didn't allow a touchdown, Austin Hooper had 9 catches for 130, and Joe Flacco, is on the bench still. Can't get wacko with Flacco.
Coming up next, let's answer 3 tough questions. You can play along. Try to go a perfect 3-0 on Fantasy Football Weekly. Fantasy Football Weekly. I'm Paul Charchian from Fanball.com. My panel of experts for this segment, Matt Harrison, Brian Johnson. Guys, it is time to get into the grinder with 3 tough questions. Actually, you know what? I thought they were tough questions when I wrote them, but, you know, upon retrospect, I don't know if they're that tough. We'll find out. Listeners, you better go 3-0. And my panel of experts especially better go 3-0. I'll tell you that much.
I like their chances better.
Todd Gurley owners are dealing with injury issues and bizarre usage patterns, yet his touchdowns have been enough to maintain his fantasy values. Should Gurley owners unload him, probably at a discount, or hold him? Brian Johnson.
Well, despite having absolutely zero shares of Todd Gurley in any format, I guess I'm still allowed to say I was feeling good about him following last week's game when he played 93% of the snaps, saw 18 of the 19 running back touches. It seemed like he might have been out of the woods for a minute. And then the midweek injury news pops up with a thigh bruise that might keep him out of Sunday's game. I doubt that happens, but it just reminds you.
He's now doubtful.
I take that back. So yeah. Here we go again with Todd Gurley. And so we all know the injury concerns, and really it's been the knee, but now it's the thigh, and who else knows what's coming down the pike. But what is coming down the pike for the Rams, specifically the Rams running backs, is the 24th hardest schedule, where 24th is bad and 1 is good. They are 24th.
Wait. So 24 is bad or good?
Bad. It's okay. Bad.
They
for
have
Gurley.
A top 10 schedule the
top
rest of the way.
Easiest or top 10
top
hardest?
Top 10 difficult.
Hardest.
Okay.
Every
right.
team
more
in their
top 10
one
defenses.
Of the 10 hardest defense.
Yes. Yeah.
Okay. Got it.
I could have phrased that better.
All right.
Every team in their division is bottom 11 in fantasy points per game allowed to running backs, meaning fewest amount. Very bad. And the best team of all might be San Francisco when it comes to running, stopping the run game. That's their opponent this week and in week 16, where you can't even trust Gurley's going to be healthy, but you might not even play him week 16 if he is, because San Fran looks so legit in their front seven. So long story short, sell at the slightest discount, slightest, any discount really, sell Gurley.
All right.
I don't have much more to add to that, but I don't think that you can sell him even at a slight discount. You got to sell him at a deep discount right now, especially with the injury news that's going on and his touch total that has been weird and murky at best. So I'm probably going to hold, because I don't like to sell at a crazy significant discount. And the touchdowns have frankly still been there when he's played.
Gurley is getting 12 carries per game. 12. That's just not enough for anybody to have reliable production. That's a problem in and of itself. But and then get this. On 12 carries per game, he's already hurt. And it's not even the chronically arthritic knee yet for Todd Gurley. In all probability, this is just the beginning of the injury issues. It's something
might be the beginning of the end of his career, unfortunately.
No, it actually absolutely could be. Now, those 5 touchdowns are masking a lot of risk with Gurley, and the guy you try to trade him to may look and go, "Oh, Todd Gurley, he's still top 10 or whatever, top 15 in my league scoring system. We're going to sell now. It's harder because he's going to miss this. He's going to miss this game. In all probability, you're going to have to pay a steeper discount now than if you had a week ago.
I'm going to try to put this in the gentlest way possible.
Yeah.
Okay. Maybe I'm not. Target the dumbest owner in your league. You know who he is.
Well, you know what? There are owners who gravitate to name value.
Yep.
Right?
Names and stats.
I want Todd Gurley. the guy who won with Todd Gurley over the past couple of years, who has an emotional attachment to Todd Gurley. Those are your targets
Tough
right there. We are selling low.
Two.
Let's try that.
Tough question number two.
Michael Gallup has played in two full games, averaging 7 catches and 135 yards. Does his evolution help or hurt Amari Cooper? Matt.
You know, Charge, this one did damage my Wernicke's area a little bit.
Oh, God, not a shot to the Wernicke's.
Yeah, and when that happens, you start going into long sentences that have no meaning. You add extra words or create new words, Zizzy Baluba, and your speech sounds are all messed up. So, yeah, in games that Gallup has played so far this year, Amari Cooper has 6 106 and 1, 4 44 and 1, and 11 226 and 1. That's a score in every game, and a 226 yarder in there. In the games he didn't play, Cooper had a 6 catch, 88 yard, and 2 score game. That's good, but 5 for 48. That's bad. That's his worst game of the year. What's good for the offense is good for the offense. Michael Gallup's only freeing up Amari Cooper to be a better player. I think it's a great thing. It helps him a lot.
All right. Brian.
Yeah, I have the same stats for this season. I went back to last year, too. At the time, by the time Dallas acquired Cooper, he had some monster games when Gallup didn't even do anything at all. But as Matt said, when Gallup posts wide receiver one numbers this year, Cooper bests them, and he did that last year in the two games they played together where Gallup managed to top at least 70 receiving yards. In week 13, Gallup had 5 for 76. Cooper had 8 for 76. Week 16, Gallup had 3 for 53 and 1. That is the one game where Amari Cooper logged just 4 catches for 20 yards. So in the 4 of 5 games where Gallup has posted wide receiver one numbers, Cooper still comes out on top, so it only helps Cooper, the evolution of Gallup, that is.
You are correct. How about this? Does it help Zeke? Does it help or hurt Zeke to have both Gallup and Cooper performing at a high level?
Absolutely helps. It's good for the offense. It's good for the offense.
You are correct. Anything. We want as much total productivity from an offense as we can get, without a doubt.
Tough question number three.
What's the most common letter grade we'll be giving Gardner Minshew for the rest of this season? By the way, I think he's going to start the rest of the games this season.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Yeah. Brian.
All right. Right now, as I mentioned earlier in the show, he's a top 12 quarterback. That basically makes him an automatic B most weeks. He looks legit. DJ Chark looks legit. Mm-hmm. Leonard Fournette is legit when he's healthy. And what else is legit is the schedule for Gardner Minshew moving forward. Let's look at week 7 through 12. He has Cincinnati, the Jets, Houston, Indy, bye, Tennessee. All of those teams have allowed 8 or more passing touchdowns, except the Jets, who have had their bye, and is in the top half of passing touchdowns allowed in the league. Then, in weeks 13 to 16, when it really matters, he gets Tampa Bay, the Clippers of L.A., just kidding, it's the Chargers, the Raiders, and the Falcons, who have allowed 41 passing touchdowns combined already this season. That's 4 straight A's in week 13, 14, 15, and 16 as of right now. And I'll give him an A against the Bengals and probably Indy, who has allowed 10 passing touchdowns. That's the majority of the games. I'm giving Gardner Minshew an A answer here.
The most common grade you're going to get is A.
Yes.
For you. Okay. All right, Matt.
I had slightly different answers, but yeah. it came up as A's as well. He had a majority of A grades in this. I had 4 A's, 3 B's, and 2 C's in my matchup. So I'm with Brian.
He can run the ball. Neither of us mentioned that, too. He's proven he can run the ball as well. So,
yeah, wow. He runs a bit, for sure. I had 1, 2, 3, 4. I have 5 B grades and 3 A's, only 2 C's. And so I thought I was being overly optimistic. I'm like, man,
Minshew mania has hit this half of the table.
It really has. I thought I was the highest guy on Minshew, and that I was crazy to be giving him all these A's. And as it turns out, you guys are even farther over the moon for him than I am. Here's the best thing about Gardner Minshew. He's been fantasy viable in every game this year. That's something very few quarterbacks can say, that they've had no flop games. Minshew hasn't had any yet. He's got more fantasy points than Aaron Rodgers or Philip Rivers or Matthew Stafford. I'm not even counting the bye in there for Stafford. He's been on a per start basis. He's outscoring those guys. 5 B grade games. B grade is the most common grade for Gardner Minshew. He is a fantastic target right now, by the way. Go get him. Available and still in plenty of leagues, and even the ones he's not, you go pick him up.
And when you factor the quarterbacks who have fallen by the wayside, like consensus top 10 guys this summer, like Baker Mayfield, Aaron Rodgers, Drew Brees, that bumps
in a preseason show
the rankings.
I jokingly mentioned Gardner Minshew just as like a silly name of a guy on a roster.
Yeah.
And suddenly he's better than Baker Mayfield.
Yeah. It's not close, yeah, as a matter of fact.
So did you hear, sorry, really quick, how he dropped everyone in his dynasty league, he burnt it down and started from scratch. And he's like, so he just relied on the rookie draft and the free agent draft. He just dropped everyone, and he's currently in first place, according to his
teammates. In his own fantasy league. Own fantasy, I think that's league. Awesome.
He's probably on his own team, I would imagine.
Well, I hope so. Speaking of Baker Mayfield, Seattle takes on Cleveland, Matt. Let's start on the Seattle side. You made a passing reference to Rashad Penny earlier. You liked
him. Well, he was my take a chance on me. That's not passing.
Well, I wasn't listening, really. I tune you out mostly.
That's true.
So what do you think about Chris Carson, then?
I still gave Carson a B grade. With Penny returning last week, Carson still held the touch lead 28-8 over Penny. And Cleveland's defense has been porous against the run. They've allowed 5 yards per carry to opposing backs this year, so Carson's still a B. Russell Wilson gets an A. His passer rating when under pressure is a league high, 113.8. He is on fire right now. Tyler Lockett gets an A, too. He scored in 3 games this season, and the two he didn't, one was a stinker, the other was 10 for 79, so he's an A grade as well. He's Russell's favorite target.
Mm-hmm.
His second favorite target's probably Will Disley. In the last 4 weeks, Disley has 4 touchdowns and either topped 80 yards or scored in every game. And the Browns have allowed 4 touchdowns to tight ends this year. That's the second most in the NFL. Yeah, so Will Disley gets an A grade.
I'd start him over Travis Kelce this week.
That's crazy.
It is.
It happens sometimes.
Yep.
DK Metcalf, he's on the bench. It seems like he's very touchdown dependent, scoring in 2 games this year. The problem is he's been held to 4 or fewer receptions in every game this year, including 5 total catches over the last 3 weeks. On the Browns side, I'm giving Nick Chubb a B. No back has topped 69 yards against the Seahawks this year. Where are
nine
you, Brian?
Times.
60.
Nine.
60,
nine
not.
Times.
No, nine. I really can't do that.
I'm sorry. Here's a very belated nice.
There we go. However, both Alvin Kamara and David Johnson have had over 90 receiving yards. Chubb has had at least 3 receptions in 4 of 5 games this year. And if Mayfield continues to run for his life from this line, Chubb may see some bonus pass work. I got B grades on both Odell Beckham and Jarvis Landry. Outside that week 2 catch for Odell, where he turned a 7-yard slant into an 80-yard touchdown, Beckham owners have been super disappointed. And I just saw in one of my leagues, Beckham plus Carlos Hyde was traded for Allen Robinson alone.
Jeez.
It's come this far.
Wow.
Odell is still top 10 in targets and 11th in air yards, so some positive regression is due. Go get him now. Go get him now. And Jarvis Landry, he's 3rd in the league in yards after catch with 191. Somehow hasn't scored. He's had at least 7 targets.
He never scores. That's the thing. That's the whole problem with Landry.
Well, nobody's scoring on the Browns.
Oh,
but between
too.
The two of them, they have 1 touchdown.
Jeez.
At least 7 targets in 4 of 5. And the noteworthy thing is Cooper Kupp burned the Seahawks from the slot last week.
Yeah, he did.
Tyler Boyd and Juju each put up decent days against Seattle. And Michael Thomas scored from the slot. So I like Landry as a B.
Every week, you can play the Crush Charge Championship for free at fanball.com. When you assemble a better salary cap team than mine, you get a shot at this week's prize pool of $1,000. Again, it is free to play. More importantly, though, when you beat me, that's your ticket to our Week 17 Championship, where you battle me for the $10,000 grand prize. Go to fanball.com/charge. Again, free to play, the Crush Charge Championship. Back in moments with more matchups, including Washington and Miami, two offenses that we normally just sort of gloss over, but suddenly there's starters all over the place when the two worst teams in football match up. We'll tell you who you dare play when we come back to Fantasy Football Weekly. Weekly returns, and we are back diving into the matchups. But first, did you know you can play Superflex Salary Cap at Fanball.com? If you love starting two quarterbacks, go to Fanball.com and play our Salary Cap Superflex DFS.
Oh, Superflex is so fun. You get bonus money, and you can really make some cool lineups on there.
The best. You can use four tight ends, too, if you want to get super, super, Superflex.
You could go with the two quarterbacks I'm going to give you in Washington, Miami.
No.
And then just bank. You could start, like, your number one player at every other position.
I like it.
There's something to be said about that.
Let's hear it.
They both got starting grades, beginning with Case Keenum.
Dry heaving over here.
Why? Case Keenum. Now, first, give Bill Callahan credit. He got the right quarterback onto the field. Case Keenum is the least non-functional of the Washington quarterbacks.
That's so nice of you to say.
He actually posted three good fantasy games in his three full starts and finishes. His teams have averaged 21 points. That's not that bad. Miami is the easiest defense that the Redskins will face all year. Terry McLaurin and Trey Quinn got positive matchups.
Terry McLaurin.
That's right. Positive matchup. Case Keenum, C grade. Let's go to the receivers I just mentioned, beginning with Terry McLaurin, who gets a B grade. Now, last week, he only put up a three-catch line, but it was just the third time in 22 games that Stephon Gilmore allowed more than 50 yards to a single player in coverage, which tells you again, reinforces McLaurin's pretty darn good. He will see a lot of Dolphins cornerback Xavien Howard, who used to be really good, but he's taken a huge regression back last year to this season, and he has allowed 11 catches and two touchdowns in his last two games alone and could struggle with Terry McLaurin's speed. McLaurin's quite a bit faster, so I like McLaurin here quite a bit. I mentioned Trey Quinn as a deep sleeper here. Now, I know he's been very quiet, but in Keenum's three starts, he averaged six targets. That's not bad. He goes up against Dolphins cornerback Eric Rowe in the slot. Rowe's allowed two touchdowns already and is allowing a passer rating of 134 in his coverage. So Trey Quinn, startable here. Even two running backs are startable. I got five Redskins you can start. Adrian Peterson. Bill Callahan says, you know, he's basically telegraphed the whole game plan. We're going to run and establish the run.
This is going to be more than the combined starters we recommend in every other week, but this week for both of these teams.
The Dolphins have given up a rushing score in eight straight games going back to last year, obviously. They've allowed the most total yards to running backs. They've allowed the most touchdowns to running backs. Now, Adrian hasn't been good. He hasn't topped 3.5 yards per carry.
The Dolphins have also played
games.
Actual legitimate NFL teams in their prior couple of games.
Look, I understand, but Peterson's going to get enough work where I think he's absolutely startable. C grade on Adrian Peterson, C grade on Chris Thompson, who's got at least four catches in each of his five games this year. And now, oddly, Miami's allowed the second fewest running back receptions, but has allowed four touchdowns to running backs through the air. So we're still going to give Chris Thompson a dart throw here, too. C grade. Paul Richardson is on the bench because I can't quite go that far here. But, it wouldn't be the worst thing in the world, but I can't get myself to put six Redskins in. Now, I've got four starting Miami Dolphins in this one. Kenyon Drake gets a B grade. Kenyon Drake is going to outscore a bunch of brand-name running backs this week.
Let's just be like a weird Kalen Ballage game out of nowhere.
Ballage has been effectively benched. He was on the field for eight snaps last week, which is eight too many, by the way. The Redskins give up the third most rushing attempts, the ninth most rushing yards, the ninth most receptions to running backs, the ninth most receiving yards to running backs. And Kenyon Drake's getting all the work. He has seen his rushing yards and yards per carry rise in every game this year. He's also averaging five targets per game. Kenyon Drake is sitting on a really nice game.
What letter grade did you give him?
B.
Ugh. I'm against all of this.
If that made you nauseous, wait until you hear the C grade I'm giving Josh Rosen, who has thrown one touchdown on the season.
Church is like, hold my beer.
The Redskins have allowed the most passing touchdowns, including three touchdowns in every game but one. Rosen's going to get to two in this game, earning him a C grade. That means I got to like somebody he's going to throw the ball to.
Preston.
How about Preston Williams? He's got a juicy matchup against a reeling Redskins secondary that's allowed nine touchdowns to receivers, second most. The Redskins have got exactly one solid cornerback, a guy named Quentin Dunbar. I am a little bit worried that Dunbar is going to be on Williams, which is what I would do if I ran the Redskins, but they might be dumb enough to put him on. DeVante Parker, who also gets a C grade. Parker is top 56 yards in 3 of 4 games, and he scored before last week's bye. He is a dart throw against a fading Josh Norman in this matchup. How about that? 9 starters between Washington and Miami, 2 teams that the best thing they could possibly do is lose this game.
I think it's safe to say Norman is faded at this point. Not even fading.
How many times would you start a player in this game?
9 times.
Really?
9 times.
Huh.
San Francisco takes on the LA Rams. Brian, the San Francisco offense, confounding in many ways. You've got to deal with a bunch of different running backs, a bunch of different receivers. What do you think about a tricky matchup with the Rams? Minus Aqib Talib, by the way, who's been ruled out of this one. And I think that opens things up a little bit for Jimmy Garoppolo.
That might be addition by subtraction, the way Talib's been playing recently.
Of the last couple of weeks, yes, although he was better early.
Okay, we'll start with Jimmy G, but Friday news came out that George Kittle is questionable now with a groin injury. So that obviously changes the prospects for Jimmy Garoppolo if Kittle sits. But let's assume Kittle does go. I'll give Jimmy G the C. He's averaging under 30 pass attempts per game. He's been way more of a game manager, mainly because that 49ers defense is looking really good.
Yeah.
But San Francisco is the underdog here, so the 49ers may need to pass more than usual. And over the last 2 weeks, that secondary struggled big time for L.A. Both Jameis Winston and Russell Wilson threw for 4 touchdown passes each. So Jimmy G, pretty safe C if Kittle's able to go. If Kittle goes, A. If he doesn't go, obvious bench. The Rams are allowing a very modest 6 catches for 50 yards to opposing tight ends. Kittle's history against L.A. is way more than modest. He has gone off in 3 straight, 9 for 149 and 1 in his most recent 598 and 1 the game before that, and 4 for 100 the game before that. So you're starting Kittle. That's a no-brainer. The running backs for the 49ers, though, they're going to be out without Joe Staley and another starting tackle in this one.
That's tricky.
So Matt Breida, Tevin Coleman, going to give them both a C. I want to give a stat about how good Breida is.
He's
really
so good.
Since the start of 2017, there have been 43 running backs with at least 250 carries.
Okay.
Among those 43 running backs, only 7 have averaged more than 5 yards per carry. Breida ranks 2nd among all those running backs at 5.22 yards per carry. Number 1, your boy Philip Lindsay, by the way.
Oh, I love it.
Breida also hit the highest speed of any player in the NFL last week in that long run.
It was 22 miles an hour.
It was 24.
24 miles an hour? That's crazy, crazy fast. The whole bit on Breida, I think part of it, people just didn't want to believe because he wasn't a brand name guy and he wasn't drafted in a high position. But just the eye test tells you he's awesome. He just has to stay healthy. Whenever healthy, Breida is unbelievable.
And just remember, it rhymes with cheetah.
For a reason.
Mm-hmm.
Do you remember what Steve Smith called himself when he came into the league? Sneeta. Half snake, half cheetah.
I
am not kidding. That is a Steve Smith fact. Factoid right there, Sneeta.
Well, it's Sneets outside.
That's right. Back to the running backs.
Back to Breida and Coleman. Unfortunately for Breida, Tevin Coleman is healthy. Coleman saw 16 touches on 32% of the snaps last week. Breida, 14 touches on 35% of the snaps. It's basically a timeshare there. The Rams have yielded the 9th most carries to running backs, but just over 4 yards per clip. So just to see for the running backs for San Fran this week. And all the 49er wide receivers are on the bench. You just can't trust those guys. Over to the L.A. side, Todd Gurley can't be trusted this week. It seems like either.
No, doubtful.
Doubtful to play. Wasn't going to be in a good spot if healthy. I've mentioned multiple times how good this 49ers defense is, especially against running backs. Opposing running backs are averaging under 95 combo yards per game, and not one back has found pay dirt against the 49ers. So you'll start Malcolm Brown, but temper your expectations in this one because it's going to be a long day for him. Probably not a long day for Cooper Kupp, though. He gets an A. Looking like Adam Thielen last year. If he tops 100 yards, that's 5 straight games to start the season for Cooper Kupp.
Mm-hmm.
Big-name slot receivers have done well against the 49ers. Tyler Boyd, Juju, Jarvis Landry, Chris Godwin all had good games. And according to Sports Info Solutions, 28 of Cooper's 41 catches this year have come in zone coverage, a scheme San Fran deploys more than 80% of the time. So things shaping up nicely for Cooper. Not been a nice season for Robert Woods. Going to give give him a B here, sort of reluctantly. At least 8 targets in 4 or 5 games, but has fewer than 50 yards in 3 of the last 4. He's been the quote-unquote beneficiary of Goff's struggles this year.
Yeah.
Has not scored in 3 games against San Francisco either as a member of the Rams. Boundary receivers like John Ross and Deontay Johnson had good games, though, so a B for Woods. Brandon Cooks is in concussion protocol.
I think he could play.
They said he was trending toward playing.
I'm hoping he doesn't for people that own him, because then they have to decide to start him or not. I'm wavering towards benching him. He has scored in just 2 of his last 10 regular season games.
Oof.
And has topped 75 yards only once during that 10-game span. Granted, one of those games he scored in came against the 49ers in Week 17. Scored twice, actually, but San Fran is much better now. And don't forget, Cooper Kupp was not playing in that game either. So I can't fault you for starting Cooks, but I'm not advocating it. Gerald Everett.
Yeah,
nice game last week.
Hot pickup this week, Gerald Everett.
I wouldn't chase that box score. The 49ers have allowed a league low 87 total yards to the tight end position this year. Yes, they've had their bye, but they defend the position really well, and I'm not starting Gerald Everett ever. Go grab Noah Fant. I like him way more.
Really? All right.
And Jared Goff. This is a home game. He's way better at home. Since the start of last season, Goff has a 25-6 touchdown to interception ratio at home, 14-13 on the road. So he gets a B here. Jameis Winston, Baker Mayfield, Mason Rudolph all struggled mightily, though, against the 49ers. But Andy Dalton had 311 yards and 2 touchdowns. So there is a beacon of hope for Goff here, hopefully.
Our final topics are ahead. When we provide you with 3 guys we believe will be hot waiver wire pickups next week that you'll want to get this week. So everybody else next week is trying to get those guys and
blammo.
That's right. They're already on your team.
Blammo.
Speculation is happening next on Fantasy Football Weekly. Fantasy Football Weekly and iHeartRadio production. Reminder, if you missed any of the player ratings we've been talking about for over an hour now, hour and a half, whatever it's been, all my player rankings available for free at fanball.com/charch. You can play against me for free for your share of a $1,000 prize pool while you're there in the Crush Charge Championship. Guys, this is a bit we like to call premature speculation, maybe the most popular segment on the entire show. Each of our hosts will provide a player who will be a hot waiver wire pickup next week that you're going to pick up this week. We begin with Brian Johnson. Who you got?
I'm going to go with Justice Hill, running back for the Ravens. And right now, Hill's kind of buried on the depth chart behind Mark Ingram, of course, and Gus Edwards.
Yeah.
But the moral of the story is right now, Mark Ingram obviously has a role, and so does Gus Edwards.
Yeah.
The Ravens run the ball a ton. They are 3rd in a rushing play percentage as a team. And really, Hill passed the eye test. He looks like he has 3 down potential. He's just getting treated like garbage, like all the rookie running backs this year, essentially. But all he needs is an injury to either Ingram or Edwards, and he becomes fantasy relevant. And again, he's a guy, if something were to happen to both of these guys, he fits the mold of a bell cow back. So if you have an empty spot, he could be a game changer. You're kind of rooting for injury, which you never want to do, but if something were to happen to either of those backs, he'd be fantasy relevant in a second.
In Dynasty or Keeper leagues or Empire leagues, I think Justice Hill is really interesting for 2020 and beyond. And this is you can get him for nothing right now. Matt, who is your premature speculation guy?
Devin Singletary is only owned in about 2/3 of ESPN leagues right now. He's missed a couple of weeks with an injury. He's on a bye this week, which makes him even easier to pick up right now.
A lot of people dropping him this week.
Frankly, all the Bills that you can pick up right now, I'd pick him up, because coming up out of the bye, Miami, Philly, Washington, Cleveland, Miami again, Denver, Dallas, Baltimore, Pittsburgh, New England. None of that's really tough down the line. New England's week 16.
Yeah.
That's the toughest one. So you might not be playing Singletary in the championship game, but he's got the ability to be a bell cow, because Frank Gore's more likely to be playing bingo in November than he is to be being a bell cow running back on the Bills. So I like Devin Singletary a lot. I picked him up in a league this week.
Devin Singletary's only been able to get, because he got knocked out in week 2. He's only had 10 carries. He's averaging 17 yards a carry.
Yeah.
he's really good. Frank Gore, you all know what Frank Gore is. He's just, you know, the three yards and the cloud of dust. When the Bills want to get electrifying, they're going to use Devin Singletary.
Nobody's calling Frank Gore electric.
No. By the way, Josh Allen is going to be a top seven quarterback the rest of the way.
I agree.
Is he, outside of Lamar Jackson, he could be the best quarterback coming out of that draft class with Baker and Darnold.
For fantasy use, for sure, yeah. Because of the running. That is possible. Go check in the availability of Josh Allen as well the schedule. Again, just so easy. My take a chance on me quarterback.
Premature speculation.
My premature speculation quarterback is Cam Newton.
Who?
Cam Newton, you say.
Well, you used the other quarterback as your take a chance on me guy.
Well, I used Kyle Allen. Well, I like Kyle Allen better. And by the way,
the Panthers might too.
I think that I'll discuss this in a minute. First, know this. They're in London this week, and then, like every London team, they're on bye. So then coming out of the bye, at that point, Cam Newton's probably ready to come back. So now they're going to have a decision to make. Right. And I'm team Kyle Allen and who I think is best. But given all of the equity, money, prestige that they've got into Cam Newton.
Funny hats. Yep.
Ascots. They're going to have to put Cam back on the field and they're going to have to give him another try so that Cam can lose the job healthy. So when he comes back, he's going to play middle of the pack defenses, San Francisco, Tennessee, Green Bay, maybe even above average defenses. If he survives that, then the schedule gets really easy, including playoff runs against Atlanta, Seattle, Indy. You can wait a week. I don't think you have to pick up Cam Newton this week because he's going to be on bye next week. So you could wait a week if you want, but I think you're going to have the Panthers starter sooner than later.
That schedule is tough, and he's going to then lose the job again. So Kyle Allen might be the premature speculation.
My team's already got Kyle Allen as part of the catch, but Cam Newton's been dropped in almost all the leagues, right? Because he was bad and hurt. It's a bad combo. Mm-hmm. Let's go to back to our last set of matchups, including Atlanta taking on Arizona. This is a potential. You know, Matt Ryan has been actually very good for fantasy owners. We don't care that he leads the league in interceptions. He's been very good for fantasy owners. And I can't wait to hear what you have to say about him. And on the other side, Kyler Murray's forthcoming breakout game. But let's start with the Falcons and Matt.
Do you just
Ryan.
Want to read the whole matchup
no,
for
I
me,
just,
Charles?
You know, I just got my opinions. I want to get in there ahead of time.
It's a start everyone game across the board. Let's start with Matt Ryan. He gets an A grade, facing pressure on 38% of his dropbacks this year, but still 300 or more yards in six straight games, and the Cardinals have allowed the sixth most passing yards and the second most passing touchdowns. Julio Jones gets an A. He was held under 50 yards last week. Julio bounces back after sub 50 yard games in his last three bounce back games. 5-106 and 2, 9-138 and 1, 8-106 and 2. Julio is going to bounce back in a major way.
All right.
Calvin Ridley and Mohamed Sanu are getting B grades. The Cards are still missing both starting corners. Secondary receivers Danny Amendola and Auden Tate each scored. Both Panthers receivers scored against them this year, too. Austin Hooper gets an A, and maybe he might be the top-rated tight end this week.
He's close to the top. I think I got him 3.
We've beaten it to death this year, but the Cards are historically bad against the tight ends. They've allowed the most yards and touchdowns the position, too. Devontae Freeman, I'm giving a B grade, and Ito Smith is getting a C grade. It's become like a 50-50 timeshare. That's the problem. Freeman's getting a little bit more. It means both are startable against a Cardinals team that's allowed an average of 124 rushing yards and 37 passing yards to opposing backs over the last 3 weeks. So Freeman's still a B. On the other side, David Johnson is dealing with a back injury that popped up kind of late in the week on the injury report. Although he did play through it, Cliff Kingsbury said that he did play through it last week, and that's probably why his snap percentage went down. He only had 69% of the snaps last week compared to Chase Edmonds, who had 37%. So we saw the uptick in Edmonds last week, and DJ sat out Friday from practice. If he doesn't go, Edmonds becomes a B grade in this game. Right now I have David as a B and Edmonds as a C.
Does Edmonds maybe become an A grade because he doesn't have to share time with anybody?
That's probably closer to right.
I think it might be.
It's a B to an A, so it might be an A. The Falcons have allowed the 11th most rushing yards on the season as well. You mentioned it, Charge. Kyler Murray gets an A grade here.
Yeah, baby. This is the breakout game coming.
Well, we've said that a couple times in the last few weeks, unfortunately.
This time I mean it. This time, the first time I've said it, and I mean it, baby.
We haven't seen the ceiling yet for Murray, but the Falcons have allowed 10 touchdown passes in the last 3 weeks. So it might be time. They're tied for last in the leagues in sacks with Miami, and they've played one more game than Miami. And even with a bad O-line that Kyler has, Murray should have more time than he ever has had before. So Kyler Murray gets the A grade. Larry Fitzgerald gets an A as well. Christian Kirk gets a B if he goes. He's still limited in practice with an ankle. It's a great spot, though, if Kirk plays. The Falcons gave up 377 yards to wide receivers just last week, which is why Keyshawn Johnson was my take a chance on me wide receiver, and I gave him a B grade as well.
Yeah, that's for Kyler Murray. I love the fact that Cliff Kingsbury is giving him designed runs, and that's unlocked a lot of value for him the last couple of weeks. He wasn't letting him run early on. Now we're getting designed runs, and watching back last week's game for Kyler Murray, just the poise differential was gigantic. The accuracy was very good, except the first series where I think the adrenaline was flowing. He sailed a couple of passes early, but after that, the passes looked effortless for Murray. This is the game. I wouldn't be surprised if this is two rushing touchdowns and one passing touchdown, or two passing and one rushing. And this has got massive upside for Kyler Murray.
Yeah, Atlanta's the team you want to see as the opponent for any fantasy player moving forward. Since they lost Keanu Neal again, to torn Achilles, I believe, or ACL, they just keep getting lit up. And because Atlanta can score points, which is favorable to keep the game competitive and high scoring. But yeah, that defense is going to
be shredded. It's worth noting that Dan Quinn is their defensive coordinator and head coach right now. So they basically can't fire him during the season.
Right.
So that means we get Atlanta doing this junk for the rest of the year. It's great.
Pittsburgh takes on the Chargers. We begin with James Conner, who will be the focus of the Chargers defense because Pittsburgh is unfortunately starting Devlin Hodges in at quarterback. So
you know his nickname is Duck?
Duck. You know why it's called Duck? Probably because the offensive lineman would have to yell, Duck! They've got... Chargers are going to try to stop James Conner and make Duck Hodges beat them, which is the obvious game plan, and that's why I've just got a B grade on Conner here. Now, there is Melvin Ingram is banged up, and Thomas Davis is banged up, and they are giving up 4.9 yards per carry. So the chance, Conner could still have a big game here, but I do believe they're going to play mostly to stop Conner. Conner hit the Chargers for two touchdowns last season, so I think he will be featured in this one, particularly with Jalen Samuel out. Then we go to the passing game. With Duck Hodges at the helm, God only knows what can end up happening here. I thought he was okay in relief last week. Get this. He didn't take a snap in practice prior to getting thrown to the Wolves last week. The most he had done was work with a 7-man team. He wasn't even running with the second stringers in practice. And they threw him into the game, and he actually looked okay.
I don't think they had much of a choice but to put him in the game.
They didn't have any choice. But we got to believe this is materially going to harm the offense dramatically, and I've got just a nervous C grade on Juju Smith-Schuster here.
That's generous, I think.
We have no idea if Hodges can complete a deep pass, and that's really been what's defined Juju's fantasy value for the most part. Juju lines in up in the slot on almost 70% of his snaps, where he'll face Desmond King, who's been awful and got trucked by Cortland Sutton last week. So maybe it's going to work out for Juju this week, and I do have a C grade on him, but massive amount of variance here depending on whether Devlin Hodges can actually play the position. Vance McDonald also gets a C because a lot of times you see inexperienced quarterbacks dump off to their tight end when they're in trouble, which is all the time. And so that could help Vance McDonald's stat line here. Two games ago, the Chargers gave up three tight end touchdowns in one game. And McDonald is the best tight end that they've seen all year. So Vance McDonald gets a C. Deontay Johnson is too far down the depth chart, and he's going to draw Casey Hayward. So he's dead to us. Now, let's go to the Chargers side. Very importantly, the Chargers just lost their center, Mike Pouncey. That hurts everybody. They were already without tackle Russell Okung. He's out. That means that Dan Freeney and Forrest Lamp both are going to play out of position in this game.
I love Lamp.
You love Lamp.
Yeah.
Do you like him playing out of position?
Sure.
Okay. I've got a B grade on Austin Eckler and a C grade on the rest of the Chargers because of all of the chaos on the offensive line. Let's start with Austin Eckler. Steelers have allowed the sixth most receptions per game to opposing running backs, and two backs have topped 50 receiving yards, although none have scored. Three of the four touchdowns the Steelers have allowed were to backup runners, so I still like Eckler here, and I like him over Gordon. Now, let's talk about Gordon, who just gets the C grade. He saw 46% of the snaps last week. Head coach Anthony Lynn says he's going to get more workload this week. Mm-hmm. I think this could be 60%, 65% for Melvin Gordon. Back. He faces a Steelers team that's seeing the second most rushing attempts, but hasn't allowed any rusher to top 79 yards. Last week, they held Mark Ingram to 2 yards per carry. So I'm nervous about Melvin Gordon behind this makeshift offensive line. Then, Phillip Rivers. After a horrific start to the season, the Steelers' secondary's come together over the last 3 weeks, allowing just 203 yards per game and 2 total touchdowns. Rivers' best receiver, Keenan Allen's got a tricky matchup, which I'll talk about now and why he's just a C. He's going to see Mike Hilton, one of the better slot cornerbacks, allowing just 30 yards per game. That said, Hilton is allowing 82% of his passes in coverage, his coverage to be completed, so that helps. So maybe he can get just through PPR and repetition, he can do something here. Steelers have seen a lot of good slot receivers, and they have not allowed a touchdown, so just a C grade on Keenan Allen. And Mike Williams, always a shaky volume guy to begin with, and if the Chargers get a big lead against Duck Hodges, which is possible, that would limit Mike Williams' outlook here because he might not get much of any volume in that event. So just a C grade on Williams, and I thought about putting him on the bench. Our final matchup is Detroit taking on Green Bay. Brian, talk to us about the Lions.
Monday night game here. We'll start with Kerryon Johnson getting an A. Green Bay allowing 5.3 yards per carry and the seventh most catches to running backs this year. Kerryon saw Lions coming off a bye, by the way, which is always good news. Kerryon saw 70% of Detroit's offensive snaps in their last game, so he looks to be trending towards bell cow status. And the last four running backs to face Green Bay have produced at least 91 combo yards and at least one touchdown. So hopefully Matt Patricia uses Kerryon correctly in this one. Kenny Golladay going to get an A as well. All you need to do is look at the opposing wide receiver box scores to feel good about Babytron's prospects. Amari Cooper had 11 for 226 and 1. Michael Gallup in the same game, 7 for 113 and 1. Allen Robinson topped 100 yards. Cortland Sutton, 5 for 87. Stephon Diggs and Alshon Jeffrey both scored against Green Bay. Easy A for Golladay. Tempted to give Marvin Jones a B here, even though he's pretty touchdown dependent, although he is on pace for 70-plus catches and 1,000 yards this year, which is pretty impressive. And he does have 4 touchdowns across his last 3 games against Green Bay. But I'm going to be approach this with a little trepidation as give him a C in this one. I like Golladay a whole lot more. Over to the tight end position, TJ Hockenson, still in concussion protocol.
I know. I hope he goes.
Hope he goes, too. His floor can hit you hard, though. Trust me, I know. He's probably a low-end tight end one, if cleared, especially in this week's tight end wasteland. Teams targeting tight ends against the Packers are 22 of 27 for 182 yards. And Green Bay will be without starting free safety Darnell Savage. For those reasons about me liking the pass catchers is why Matt Stafford gets a B. Trubisky, Cousins, and Flacco were shut down by Green Bay, but that is totally understandable. Carson Wentz and Dak Prescott both tossed multiple touchdowns against the Pack over the last 2 weeks, and Stafford has thrown 2 or 3 touchdowns in 9 straight games against
really?
The Packers.
Wow.
That is
correct. I didn't realize he was such a Packer killer.
Me neither.
Go Stafford.
They're just always behind in all these games, I take it. But might not be the case in this game. Over to the Green Bay side, could be without their starting center, Corey Lisley, I believe his name is. That'll have a direct impact on Aaron Jones. Just going to give him a B here, though. Even though the Lions run defense hasn't been as stout as last season post the Snacks Harrison trade, opposing running backs are averaging more than a touchdown per game on the ground and 70 yards through the air. Those are pretty good numbers for running backs. And despite already having their bye, Detroit has yielded the 5th most red zone touches to opposing running backs. All you have to do is pray that Jamal Williams stays off the field for Aaron Jones on this one.
I know, and Williams might come back for this one, which is a bummer.
Who will not be returning is Davante Adams. He will not play with the toe injury, won't play until it is fully healed, Green Bay is saying, and that is not this week. Geronimo Allison also questionable with a hamstring injury. He might not go. Let's assume he does. I'll give I'm sorry, Marquez Valdes-Scantling is questionable with the hammy. Allison is fine. I'll give both a C.
Other than talent.
Yeah, other than talent. Wow. I'm not sure Darius Slay would shadow either of these guys, and someone has to catch passes if Adams is out, so I'll just give both a C. The Lions have yielded the most red zone targets to opposing wide receivers, but only three wide receivers have scored so far off those targets. Jimmy Graham, hate him, but didn't give him a C. Detroit hasn't allowed an opposing tight end to score this season. Travis Kelce and Zach Ertz both had respectable games, but Graham is far from comparable to those guys. And Aaron Rodgers, also questionable. He should go.
Yeah, he'll go.
No Davante Adams hurts. No starting center. Patrick Mahomes didn't throw a touchdown pass against the Lions, so I'll give Rodgers a C on name brand alone, but I would go with almost any of our take a chance on me quarterbacks over.
No, I would too. I'd definitely start my guy, Kyle Allen. I'll tell you that much. Over the last 11 games, Aaron Rodgers averaging one touchdown pass per game.
In single quarterback 12-team leagues, Rodgers is droppable.
Yeah, I'm seeing him getting dropped in leagues.
Yep.
Yeah. If you love the show, go to fanball.com/charge for my free player rankings, my free $1,000 weekly contest, guillotine leagues, podcasts, and more. Many thanks to everybody who takes the time to rank and review the show on your podcasting platform of choice. We really appreciate the feedback. Talk to you next week for more Fantasy Football Weekly, everybody. Bye-bye. Fantasy Football Weekly is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.